Hello again, friends, and welcome. Let's gather once again around the old parlor radio and hear some great radio programs from a bygone era. I'm your host, Corey Walker. Today I have selected two different series, each from a different genre. We'll start with the classic Western series, Gunsmoke. The series was a long-running one, debuting on the CBS radio network on Sunday, April 26, 1952, and running until Sunday, June 18, 1961. It also ran on television for 20 years, from 1955 to 1975. The show was developed by producer-director Norman MacDonald and writer John Meston over a two-year period and became the first Western series written for an adult audience. This particular episode, titled Lynching, is from Season 1 and first aired on Saturday, August 16, 1952. William Conrad starred throughout the series as Marshal Matt Dillon. I hope you enjoy.
Around Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad. The story of the violence that moved west with young America. The story of a man who moved with it. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Over here. All right. Let me get this noose around your dirty neck and you'll be swinging in no time. There. Not too tight, is it? I wouldn't want you to be uncomfortable.
That's enough of that, Camp.
Who said that?
I did.
I said it. Rice Stewart. What's the matter, you turning yellow?
Get this over with, Cam. Why devil him?
Because that's what he is, that's why.
Shut up. I'll take care of you in a minute. Rice, you got anything against my hanging this murderer?
Just don't devil him, that's all. Get it over with.
I'll do it my way. It's my brother he shot, isn't it? And in the back, too. Rice, maybe you'd like me to turn this bushwhacker loose. Is that it?
Oh. Well, ask him his name. Nobody's even asked him his name.
You'll hate this night. All of you. I was in on a lynching once, and I swore I'd never be in on another.
Well, I guess the joke's on you, isn't it, fella?
Look, I hear you laugh again, Cam, so help me, I'll shoot you.
Maybe you shouldn't be here, Rice.
How can you hang a man you don't even know his name?
What do I care what his name is?
So long as he pays for murdering Job.
What's your name, fella? What do you care? You don't want to stop him. You just want it off your conscience, that's all.
Tell me your name.
It's Billy Saxton, that's my name, Billy Saxton. How's it sound?
Billy? Why'd you kill Job Powell?
That's enough talk. What difference it make? He killed him, and that's all I need to know.
Yeah, what do you care? He's gonna hang me anyway.
Sure I am. Right now.
Billy, I got a rifle. I'll end it for you when we ride off. You won't have to strangle for long.
Thanks, mister. Thanks.
Get back, Rice. I'm going to slap that horse out from under him. You ready?
Not for you!
Let's go, men.
Conceal the hour of their death. Grant that we may pass our days in the practice of holiness and justice, and that we may be able to quit this world in the peace of a good conscience. Amen.
Amen.
May Job Powell rest in peace. Amen.
Amen. Go ahead, boys. Thank you.
Good morning, Cam. I'm sorry to be here about Job.
You're late for the burial, Marshal.
Well, I was out at Fort Dodge last night. Just heard about it this morning. Preacher?
We are in the Valley of the Shadow of Death, Marshal Dillon.
Well, if you're all through here now, I wonder if you'd read a few prayers over another man. We got him in a grave just over the hill with.
Another man?
Man is born into trouble as the sparks fly upward. Job 5:7. Who was this man, Marshal? How did he die?
He was murdered last night.
I didn't hear about any murder outside of Job here. Where was this shooting, Marshal?
It wasn't a shooting. It was a lynching.
I just buried my brother, Marshal. Billy Saxton shot him in the back. Aren't you using the word murder a little loose around here?
Only the law can hang a man without it being murder, Cam.
The law's too slow sometimes.
You know something about this?
All I say is that he shot my brother and he deserved hanging.
Hanging, maybe. Lynching's a different matter.
What difference it make? He got what was coming to him.
He had a fair trial coming to him, like any man. For example, Cam, I'll try to see that you get one.
What?
If you're guilty of leading that lynch party.
Well, say it out, Marshal. You accusing me?
I got no evidence.
And you won't get any. There isn't a man in the country who'll stand still for bushwhacking. Saxton got his due, and that's that.
Maybe. All right, come on, preacher. Let's bury him.
Whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. Genesis 9:6. Show me the grave, Marshal.
Why don't you just arrest Cam Powell, Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, he won't admit anything, Chester, and I can't find a witness.
Must be somebody who'll talk.
Cam's a bigger man than ever now with Job dead. The others don't want to cross him.
Mm-hmm. He owns a lot of land, all right.
And Job also owned a piece of the bank. Cam will get that now. Ranchers always need money, so they won't talk.
Yes, and maybe they're ashamed, too, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah, maybe.
I saw lynching once, and not a man there could look in the eye for a long time afterwards.
You weren't in on it, were you, Chester?
Oh, my gracious, no, Mr. Dillon. I was just a small boy. That was back in Waco. They hung a cousin of mine there.
Oh, why?
Well, sir, it's kind of hard to explain. He was about as honest a fellow as I ever knew, outside of some loose notions about other people's cattle. But, Mr. Dillon, I just don't believe that struck him as stealing.
Why not?
Well, because there wasn't anything personal about it, if you know what I mean.
Well, I don't, but maybe you can explain it to me.
Well, sir, just that there was all those cattle running loose on the plains, and I guess they seemed like a natural part of the landscape to him. He figured anybody could own them.
Your cousin wasn't very bright, was he, Chester?
I didn't know him well enough to say, Mr. Dillon. But anyway, they shouldn't have lynched him.
No. No, they shouldn't have. And nobody's going to get by with lynching around Dodge if I have anything to do with it.
No, sir.
I heard Billy Saxton was at the Texas Trail last night. Maybe I can start there.
He sure must have hated Job to kill him like that, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah. I'll be back later, Chester.
Yes, sir, Mr. Dillon.
Hello, Kitty.
Hello.
Well, I can remember when you'd give me a smile. What's the matter?
Nothing, Matt.
Someone been bothering you?
You might put it that way. Where were you last night, Matt? Why weren't you around?
Yeah, Chester and I rode out to Fort Dodge on business. It was late, so we slept there. I thought this town could go one night without trouble.
You sure thought wrong, didn't you?
You're upset about the lynchings, that is.
That's it. Aren't you?
I heard Billy Saxton spent some time in here yesterday.
I hate men. I think they're awful, savage beasts.
It'd be worse if it weren't for the law, Kitty. Now, tell me about Saxton.
He could tell you himself, Matt, if you hadn't picked last night to wander out of town.
Now, Kitty, this isn't like you.
I'm sorry, Matt. He seemed like such a nice kid.
Where was he from? I never heard of him around here before.
The Dakotas, somewhere. He was just a cow puncher looking for a job. No more a gunman than I am.
No, you can't be sure, Kitty. Did he say he'd ever been in Texas?
The Powells came from Texas, didn't they?
Amarillo.
Well, he never mentioned Texas one way or the other.
What'd he talk about?
Horses, mostly. How he'd like to have a little spread of his own someday. And a woman.
I see.
And he talked nice about it. He wasn't like these hard cases around here.
Anything else?
Cam Powell was in this morning. Told me not to talk about Billy. Especially to you.
No? What'd you say?
I told him I'm not afraid of him, but maybe you are. So why didn't he warn you against talking to me?
That please him?
I also told him if I was a man, I'd kill him.
Who else was in on it, Kitty?
I don't know. One thing, though. Rice Stewart came in here last night. Must have been afterwards. He sat over there in that corner and got drunk all by himself. Real drunk.
It's not like Rice.
No. But maybe he was in on it and couldn't stand himself afterwards. Maybe that's why he had to get drunk.
Well, I'll go see him.
Anyone who was there would be in trouble, too. Wouldn't they, Matt?
Yeah. But I have a feeling Cam really headed this thing, and if I can prove it, I'll have him up for murder.
I'll keep my ears open, Matt.
Thank you, Kitty. I think I'll ride out to the Stewart Ranch. Rice isn't a man who can lie with much conviction.
Good luck, Matt.
Yeah, I'll see you later.
We'll return for the second act of Gunsmoke in just a moment. But first, do you know how old the school building in your community is? If it's over 25 years old, the chances are that it's woefully inadequate to the present demands on it. Join with the groups in your community working for better school conditions. Remember, better schools build a stronger America. Now the second act of Gunsmoke.
Hello? Anybody around?
Sit down, Marshal. I'm coming out of the sun.
Well, thank you, Miss Stewart.
Got a pot of coffee in the stove, Marshal.
Oh, thank you, ma'am, but I'd like to find Rice first.
Anything wrong, Marshal?
No, I'd just like to talk to him.
Rice come home real late last night. He was awful drunk. First time in years.
If you'll forgive me, Miss Stewart, I better find him.
All right. Guess I'd rather Rice told me about it himself. Must be something up. Cam Powell was by earlier. Hasn't been around in months.
What'd you say Rice was, ma'am?
Hasn't strayed far from the house today. Keeps coming in for coffee. Uh-huh. Think he's drunk a gallon already.
Well, I'll be back for some myself in a little while.
Sure, Marshal.
Rice, you in here?
I'm here. Who is it?
Matt Dillon.
Oh. Hello, Marshal.
Hello, Rice. Can I take a little of your time?
I'd ask you up to the house, Marshal, but I think I'd rather talk here.
Miss Stewart already asked me in. She hasn't heard about what happened in Dodge last night, has she, Rice?
No, Marshal, she hasn't.
How come you didn't mention it to her?
When I tell my wife, it's my business, Marshal.
Yeah, sure. But you know, she's bound to hear about it later. Maybe she'll wonder why you didn't tell her right off.
That's still my business.
She said Cam Powell was here this morning.
Anything wrong in that?
You don't feel very good today, do you, Rice?
I got drunk yesterday. Last night I got drunker.
Is that what's bothering you?
Well, I'm not as young as I used to be, that's all.
You're a poor liar, Rice. I figured you would be.
Yeah, I suppose I am.
Look, Rice, I've known you for 4 years, and I've never heard a bad word against you. But yesterday you were a little drunk and got mixed up in something you're ashamed of now. Cam Powell's threatened you if you talk about it. Isn't that right?
That's right, Marshal.
Well, have you decided what you're going to do about it?
I don't know, Marshal. I just don't know.
Well, then maybe I'm wrong about you. Maybe you know better than Cam and the rest of them.
But it's done with now, Marshal. Why can't we just forget about it?
We just can't forget a lynching, Rice. That'd make it too easy for the next one to happen.
I'll kill the man that starts another
one. And why are you going to let Cam get by with this one?
Well, by heaven, I'm not. I should have stopped it then. I don't know what was wrong with me, but I'll face up to it now. What do you want to know, Marshal?
Where were you when Job got shot?
At the Longhorn. About six of us were having supper. Job went down the street for some cigars, and then we heard a shot out back, and we run through the kitchen and found the cook outside holding Billy Saxton.
Mm-hmm.
He'd shot Job when he passed the street end of the alley.
Did the cook see it?
Well, she said he did.
Then what happened?
And Cam, he went crazy when he found Job was dead. I don't know, Marshal, but before I knew it, we'd slipped out of town with that boy. Cam hung him on that little tree about a half mile down the road.
Yeah, I know. I cut him down.
And that cook, that Hank something or other. I remember he grabbed Saxon's gun when we run out back. I can't get it off my mind. Nobody ever even looked at the boy's gun to see if it had been fired. Cam just hung him on the cook's word for it.
Mm-hmm. All right, Rice. Thank you. Will you be a witness if I need you?
I'll see you through now, Marshal. All the way. Oh. I feel better already.
All right. Let's go get some of your wife's coffee, Rice. Yeah. Then I gotta get back to Dodge.
Good coffee, Marshal.
Chester? Chester? Chester, where are you?
I'm out back, Mr. Dillon. I'll be right in.
What? What's that you've got all over you?
Paint, Mr. Dillon. White paint.
Paint? Well, where'd you get it? Now, what are you up to now, Chester?
I sent St. Louis for it, sir. I thought it'd be a good idea to make the hitching rail out back all white.
Well, what for?
Well, sir, we might be in an awful big hurry some night, and that...
Chester, all right, all right. Look, I want you to go get cleaned up. I want you to have supper at the Longhorn tonight.
Well, I sure do thank you, Mr.
No, 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 Chester. I want you to go there alone.
Oh. Yes, sir?
It's for a reason. Do you know the cook over there, Hank something or other?
That's Hank Ashford. He's not a very good cook, Mr. Dillon.
How long's he been around?
Oh, about a week. I don't think he likes cooking much. He don't seem to be very willing either.
Well, it doesn't matter. I doubt if he'll be around for long.
Why not, sir?
I'm guessing that he'll be wanting to get out of Dodge fast after you let it drop real casual-like, mind, that I've ridden out to arrest Cam Powell.
Is that so? You going to bring Cam in tonight, Mr. Dillon?
No, no. You're just going to make Hank Ashford think I am. And don't let anyone else hear about it, though.
Oh. I've got it, sir.
You happen to know where Hank rooms?
The Dodge House, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah, it's pretty fancy for a cook, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
All right, you go to supper about 6 o'clock. And I'm gambling that Hank Ashford will be packing his things at the Dodge House by 7.
All right, Mr. Dillon.
Even, John.
Hope you're not looking for a room. We're all filled up. Texans, mostly.
Well, that's fine. What room's Hank Ashford got?
310, Marshal. Top of the stairs, straight down the hall.
Uh-huh.
Hey, he been up to anything? Up to being a mite of a hurry when he come in.
He's here now?
Went upstairs just a couple of minutes ago.
Yeah.
Something up, Marshal?
Leave that gun laid where it is, mister. Here, I'll just put it in my belt. Less likely to get you in trouble that way.
You're the marshal, ain't you?
You leaving town, Hank?
Yeah, I am.
Why?
I'm tired of cooking, that's why.
You got Billy Saxton's gun up here, Hank?
What?
Or shall I tear your stuff apart and find it myself?
No, no, it's in that drawer there.
Yeah.
But I wasn't at that lynching, Marshal. I can prove I wasn't.
Yeah, I'm sure you weren't. The shells are here. And the barrel's clean. I thought this gun killed Joe Powell.
It did. I cleaned it, that's all.
You're pretty neat, Hank, for a hash house cook. Yeah, catch this.
Now what?
And you handle that gun pretty well, too, for a cook. Look at the way you're holding it now.
I don't want that gun. What are you trying to prove, Marshal?
You're a gunfighter, not a cook, Hank.
All right, Marshal. I used to handle a gun, but I'm looking for the peaceful life now. Any law against a man changing?
No, but you're under arrest anyway.
What for?
I'll think of something. Let's go.
Wouldn't eat any breakfast, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah, that's too bad.
He says he won't be here long anyway. They all say that, don't they?
Yeah, he may be right. I see Cam Powell coming across the street for him right now.
You going to let him go, Mr. Dillon?
Well, we'll see.
All right, Marshal. What's the bail on Hank Ashford?
There's no bail at all, Cam.
What do you mean, no bail? You can't hold a man like this.
I'm not holding him.
You mean he can leave?
Anytime.
And what'd you arrest him for in the first place?
Oh, let's say, suspicion.
Suspicion of what?
Well, drunkenness.
He wasn't drunk.
No, but he might have got drunk.
You're pretty high-handed with that badge, aren't you, Dillon?
You tell me, Cam. You ought to know about being high-handed.
We're wasting time. Turn him loose. I want to get out of here.
Chester.
I'll get him, Mr. Dillon.
Hank's a right-handy man to have around, huh, Cam?
What does that mean?
Well, he can cook. Probably turn his hand to most anything. Sort of a jack-of-all-trades, isn't he?
I wouldn't know, Marshal.
Thanks for bailing me out, Cam.
I didn't have to bail you out. You're free.
Is that right, Marshal?
That's right, Hank. So go on, enjoy yourself.
Yeah, I sure will. And I'll start by having a drink. Come on, Cam, let's see if the Alfraganza's open.
Mr. Dillon?
Yeah.
You think Hank shot Job Powell, don't you?
Well, that'd be my guess, Chester.
Then why'd you let him go?
No evidence. They lynched the only witness. But I've made him a little nervous now. He'll get real jumpy with the help of some liquor.
Well, what good'll that do, sir?
They just might hang themselves, Chester. Yes, sir. With a prod or two from me.
Come on, Well, yeah.
Are you still here, gentlemen? May I buy you a drink?
What are you doing here, Marshal?
Why do you want to buy us a drink? Yeah. Huh, bartender?
Give me that bottle there, will you?
Kim, I don't like this. Let's get out of here.
Wait a minute, Hank. I'm too big a man in Dodge to get pushed around by any Marshal.
I just want you to have one drink before you leave, gentlemen.
Just one.
For you, Cam. And for you...
Thanks.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, here's to, may he rest in peace, Billy Saxton.
You looking for trouble, Marshal?
You're the one who's got trouble, Hank.
What do you mean? You turned me loose yourself.
Yeah, I know. But what about Cam here?
What?
You think Cam's going to let you go after... everything you've told me?
What'd you tell him, Hank?
Nothing. He's lying. I told him nothing.
Then what are you talking about, Marshal?
Just that I've got about all the evidence I need, Cam. Won't you ask Hank? You can tell him. Go on.
Hank, if you cross me, I'll see you die for it.
You believe him, do you? Well, go ahead. You didn't have the guts to shoot your brother yourself.
Shut up.
Who are you going to hire to shoot me?
Shut up, blast you.
Shut me up.
Man. Use your head. You got us in enough trouble already.
I have. If you'd let me shoot that boy when he stumbled on me, we'd have been all right.
Stop it.
You may be rich, Cam, but you sure ain't smart.
I'm going to kill you, Hank.
Well, draw on me and I'll have two pals tomorrow.
All right, hold it, both of you.
We've heard enough.
Well, there you are, Hank. Marshall's heard all he needs. You're done for now.
Yeah? Well, I shot a marshal in Trinidad once. Don't see why I can't shoot one in Dodge.
Don't try it, Hank.
Why not, Marshal?
Good riddance.
You're under arrest, Cam.
Hank shot Job Marshall's. You heard him say so.
I heard him. But I'm still interested in who murdered Billy Saxton.
And you're right back where you started, Marshal. Seems nobody knows about that lynching.
I know about it.
Bryce Stewart.
I'm not proud of it, but I was there. I witnessed the whole thing.
I'll take your gun now, Cam.
I guess you win, Marshal.
Nobody wins this time, Cam. Now, maybe the next time anybody gets an idea about lynching a man around here, they'll think twice. Now, you lead the way.
Gunsmoke, under the direction of Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Tonight's story was a special...
I hope you enjoyed that episode of Gunsmoke. There were many great Western series on radio during the 1950s and early 60s, but I don't think any of them had quite the success that Gunsmoke did. The episode you just heard was titled The Lynching and was from Saturday evening, August 16, 1952, just a few months into the first season of the series. William Conrad stars Marshal Matt Dillon, Party Bear's Chester, Howard McNear's Doc, and Georgia Ellis as Kitty. We're going to switch gears now, and I'm going to bring you a detective program from the late-era series, Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Johnny Dollar was a freelance insurance investigator, and every episode ended with Dollar going over his expenses for that case. The series ran even longer than Gunsmoke, debuting on Friday, February 11th, 1949, and continuing, with a few interruptions, until Sunday, September 30th, 1962, all on CBS. The ending of Johnny Dollar marked the end of Dramatic Network Radio and the last old-time radio show to be produced. This episode, titled Amelia Harwell Matter, dates from Wednesday, July 2nd, 1952, and stars Edmund O'Brien as Johnny Dollar. Enjoy.
The treat that gives you chewing enjoyment presents for your listening enjoyment Edmund O'Brien as...
Johnny Dollar.
George Parker, Johnny. Corinthian Allred.
Sure, George. How are you?
In need of an investigator. Can you take a case for us?
I've been sitting here waiting for one.
You've got it. Big policyholder on Cape Cod, Mrs. Thomas Harwell. She died from poison.
That's rare these days. I'll be over in about 30 minutes. Listen to the rest of it.
The makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum bring you Edmund O'Brien in a transcribed adventure of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum refreshes you. Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum gives you real chewing enjoyment. Yes, for chewing enjoyment plus refreshment, it's Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. The lively, delicious flavor of Wrigley's Spearmint cools your mouth, helps keep your throat moist, and gives you a nice little lift. The good, smooth chewing of Wrigley's Spearmint helps keep you feeling fresh and alert, adds enjoyment to whatever you're doing. So for chewing enjoyment plus refreshment, treat yourself often to Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Healthful, refreshing, delicious.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Home Office, Corinthian All Risk Insurance Company, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Amelia Harwell matter. Expense account item 1, $250, cab fare from my apartment to the Corinthian building and the office of George Parker.
Well, first, do you know the Harwell name?
Are they the textile people?
That's right. Mm. Strange sort of family. Fortune was built by the deceased father. She was his only child. He naturally had wanted his son to carry on the name and the business. So he trained her, Amelia. She took the man's place all her life.
How old was she?
Something over 70.
And did she still head up the business at that age?
She took a very active part.
What about the poison?
I haven't gotten any of the details on that. That'll be up to you.
Anything on the surviving family?
Yes. I have it here. Her husband, Thomas, the daughter, Maxine, and her son, Dexter. Here, you keep it. Got the ages and all.
Thanks.
From what I can gather, she was an extremely domineering woman. Ran her household like a factory. There must have been very little warmth toward her. Then, when you consider the fortune she's leaving and the insurance...
How much did she carry?
Too much. $150,000 for the family and over $200,000 with the corporation as beneficiary.
Well, that kind of money you should have hired me earlier as a bodyguard. Expense account item 2, $40, car rental, and $22, fuel and incidentals between Hartford and the Harwell estate on the eastern shore of the Cape near South Wellesley. The mansion was as solid as the family's Dun and Bradstreet rating. Heavy brick construction with turrets, shuttered windows, and massive double doors that opened into a coldly formal entry hall. The widower, Thomas, as might have been expected, was the rabbit type. Pinch glasses, high-stuffed collar with string tie and sparse hair. It announced to him in the library where, from the wall, a life-size portrait of Mrs. Harwell seemed to be keeping an eye on the proceedings.
Well, how do you do, Mr. Dollar?
Nice of you to see me, Mr. Harwell.
That will be all, Brighton.
Yes, sir.
You close the door, Brighton.
Yes, sir.
Please sit down, Mr. Dollar.
Thank you. Well, these things are always hard to start, Mr. Harwell.
I'm accustomed to bluntness, Mr. Dollar. Besides, I've talked about Mrs. Harwell for almost 50 years. I see no reason to hesitate now, because she's dead. She was poisoned, you know.
Yes, I'd heard.
But I don't think she minded.
You don't think she minded?
Mrs. Harwell was an invalid. She had a very short time to live.
I didn't know that.
Well, very few people did. She hardly admitted it to herself. Mrs. Harwell was a very strong woman, one who despised weakness, yet made everyone around her weak.
Neither of these coins have been released to the papers, the illness or the poison?
No. Due to a friendly gesture by the police, she has been spared notoriety. She wouldn't like it to be known, so it isn't.
Was she in pain, Mr. Harlow?
She never told me.
Do you think she could have taken the poison herself?
I hardly think so. That would have been an admission of defeat.
I see. Do you have any idea how she could have gotten the poison, then?
You're asking me if I suspect the children, and you're finding it difficult to do so. Is that correct?
It's hardly a pleasant thing to bring up.
The time for delicacy has passed. I'm afraid I don't approve of my daughter or my son at all.
Oh?
They're the worst sort of rich men's children. Or rich women's, I should say. I was never allowed to be their father. All they've had is a mother. They have no gumption, no ambition. They've been overly educated and have developed nothing but insatiable lust, so their mother is money. And it's too late to change them. Without it, they could not exist.
I understand they live here.
They do. I shall have Bryden call them to the drawing room, if you wish.
That won't be necessary right now. What about the servants?
Well, there are eight. Mrs. Harwell settled a small amount on each, but unfortunately, they are above suspicion. They're common people, and as a result, good.
Did Mrs. Harwell have a nurse?
She wouldn't hear of it.
Well, certainly a doctor, then.
Yes, Dr. Stevens in the village.
Thanks, Mr. Harwell. I won't take up any more of your time.
You're welcome any time, Mr. Dollar. Please give Dr. Stevens my regards. Well, Mr. Dollar, the Harwell case passes from my hands into yours. I wish you more success than I've had.
Thanks, Doctor.
Amelia was not only a hopeless cancer victim, but she was a stubborn old fool. I could have saved her life with surgery 3 years ago, but I made the mistake of advising her, and advice was something she could not accept.
You've been friendly with them that long?
I've tended them longer than that, but friendly is hardly the word. I brought each of their children into the world, but have yet to use the given names of any of them, in their presence, that is.
Hmm. Oh, I'm glad to talk to somebody like you. I found talking with the old man a little rough. I'm used to survivors being sad about death or suspicious or something.
I'm afraid that with Thomas, instead of a feeling of grief, it's something akin to passing from slavery into freedom.
And the children, are they as worthless as he makes them out?
I'd say so. Maxine, the oldest, is a bitter, frustrated old maid at 33. And Dexter, 32, is an alcoholic and has just entered into an unsuccessful marriage.
Do you think either of them could have killed their mother?
I'm in no position to accuse any of them, but there is the inheritance and your insurance.
Fine household. How long would you have lived?
It's hard to say. 2 months, possibly three.
The family know that?
I've been honest with them.
Then why kill for profit?
I don't know.
Could it have been a mercy killing?
I've wondered. It doesn't sound like them. You take a risk like that, but it's a possibility.
What kind of poison was it?
I don't know. I've been asked to attend the inquest this afternoon. If you'd like to call me at home this evening, I'd be glad to tell you what I've learned.
Thanks, Doctor, I will. So far, except for lining the family up and accusing them one by one, I can't seem to map out a move. What about this marriage you mentioned?
Dexter's? I don't know much about it. The girl's name is Gretchen Nielsen. She owns a small photographic studio just down the street.
Small business, huh? It's below Harlow standards, isn't it?
That is probably the cause of the trouble. I don't doubt that Amelia wouldn't let her in the house.
Through the plate glass window of her studio, Gretchen Nielsen looked like a girl anyone would enjoy having around the house. She lived up to her Nordic name, fine straight features, warm blue eyes, the look of strength about her. I got her home address and knocked at the door of a small house 15 minutes after she arrived home that evening. Miss Nielsen?
Yes?
I guess I should have said Mrs. Harwell. My name is Dollar. I'm an insurance investigator working on the elder Mrs. Harwell's death side. I'd like to talk with you.
Well, I don't know anything about it. Why have you come here?
Because I haven't found any place else to go.
I'd rather not talk to you.
Why not? There are things you don't want to say.
All right. Come on in. I'm surprised I haven't been questioned before this.
The police haven't started yet. Probably why you haven't.
I suppose that means I can expect to be dragged into it by them.
I'd imagine so, yes.
We can sit over here.
You know she was poisoned, don't you?
Yes, I didn't until Bryden the butler told me. I read about the death in the paper and phoned out there.
Why aren't you living there with your husband?
You have no right to ask me things like that, have you?
You don't have to answer my questions, but it might be a good idea to get things out in the open.
Why?
Because there has to be a reason for Mrs. Harwell to die the way she did. Could your marriage to Dexter be behind it in some way?
I don't see how.
Wouldn't they let you and Dexter live together in the house?
I didn't give them a chance to let me. They knew I'd never live there. What did they tell you? What did they say about the fortune hunter who lured and trapped their only son?
You weren't mentioned.
That's hard to believe.
Why isn't Dexter here with you?
Because he's a slave. He's too weak to be anything else. I hate myself for saying that, but it's true.
Why'd you marry him?
Because I love him. I thought we had something that would drag him away from that family that smothers him. But when the time came, he wouldn't leave them.
Why not?
Because his mother never taught him to do anything but hold out his hand for the money that was always there for the taking.
He's due to come into some money of his own now. Quite a chunk.
You led the conversation to this point, didn't you? Dexter would never kill for the money.
There has to be a reason why she died.
I think her husband did it.
Why?
To stop her suffering. I caught her off guard a few times. I know she was in pain. And I know she was frightened. Probably for the first time in her life. I think he knew that, too, and wanted to help.
That could be. First, it sounded like you hated her. Now you don't.
I feel sorry for her. Because she made so many mistakes. And now she's dead and there's nobody to correct them.
I didn't string out my meeting with Gretchen Harwell and May Nielsen. I left, went to my hotel, and at 7, phoned Dr. Stevens. His report on the inquest brought out, among other things that didn't seem important at the time, this point. The cause of death was a non-alkaloid poison administered in suicide or by person or persons unknown. The poison was hardly the type to choose either for suicide or a mercy killing. With what I had, I went out back to the Harwell residence.
I'm sorry, sir. Mr. Harwell has retired.
Is the rest of the family up?
Yes, sir.
I wonder if you'd tell them that I'd like to see them.
Very well, sir. If you'll wait in the library, I'll tell them you're here.
And this is my sister, Maxine.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Now, what do you want?
I understand both of you were here the night your mother died.
Yes, that's right.
I've just gotten the verdict of the inquest. The poison that killed her was not a pleasant one. Did any of you hear any sound shortly before your mother was discovered dead?
I didn't, and I found her. I went in to bid her good night.
I didn't hear anything. I was in my room.
Where's that?
Just down the hall from Mother's.
What's the meaning of this, anyway?
The point is that your mother would have cried out. The poison would have been...
What's that?
It's Father. He's in his room.
Something's wrong. I'm going up to see.
I went with him. We found Mr. Harwell in bed, clawing his throat and staring at the ceiling. When I bent over him, he moved a hand towards a glass of water on the bedside table. I picked it up and smelled it. I'm no chemist, but I didn't need to be to know that he'd been poisoned.
Friends, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, you'll enjoy chewing Wrigley's Spearmint Gum. Chew Wrigley Spearmint while you're working. The lively, full-bodied flavor of Wrigley Spearmint gives you a refreshing little lift. The smooth, pleasant chewing of Wrigley Spearmint gum helps keep you feeling relaxed and satisfied, makes your job seem easier. Chew Wrigley Spearmint gum in your home, when you're out walking or driving, when you're enjoying outdoor sports and other activities. Wrigley Spearmint gum tastes good anytime, and the natural chewing aids digestion and helps keep your teeth bright and attractive. Yes, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, you'll enjoy chewing Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Healthful, refreshing, delicious. And now, with our star, Edmund O'Brien, we bring you the second act of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
I tried to read something in the expressions of the son and the daughter as we stood for a moment around their father's bed. There wasn't much in them. No surprise, no fear, no satisfaction. Maxine looked a little embarrassed and left to phone Dr. Stevens. Dexter looked a little vague and said he thought he knew where a medical book was. And I was left alone with Thomas Harwell.
I'm all right. I'm all right. Call them back, Mr. Dollar. I'm all right. I won't die.
Of course you won't.
I'm all right.
How much water did you drink?
Not very much. I was so thirsty, too. But I think I smelled it. I only said, I felt a terrible burning in my throat. I could hardly breathe. Who would do this to me?
I was hoping you could tell me, Mr. Harwell. We won't talk about it now. Dr. Stevens is coming out to have a look at you.
I'm glad he's been called. He's my friend.
Anything I can do for you in the meantime?
No, thank you. I'm going to be all right. I'm not ready to follow him either. I'm not ready yet.
I took the glass of poisoned water with me when I left the room. I put it on a table in the hallway outside his door and stayed with it until Dr. Stevens arrived. He spent about 15 minutes with Mr. Harwell, and then he joined me.
He's all right. Where's the family?
I sent him downstairs.
Good. You said you had the glass?
Yeah, here it is. Now look.
There must be enough poison in this to kill 100 people. He's a very fortunate man.
Can you tell if it's the same stuff that killed his wife?
I'd say yes. Canadine or some such.
What did he say to you?
Very little. I'm only his doctor, you know. But he did tell me that it was unnecessary for this to be reported to the police.
Oh?
I told him it would be absolutely unethical if I didn't. Sounds to me as though he's trying to protect the children.
I guess they used to be. By the way, did you notice the marks on his throat?
No.
Looks as if somebody has tried to strangle him.
Strange. I didn't notice.
Would it be all right if I talked to him now?
Oh, I think so. I gave him a very mild sedative, but it won't go to work for a while. Do you want me to wait?
Not unless you think you should.
He doesn't need me any longer. And if you'll stay here in case of another attempt...
I will. I'll call you if anything develops.
Fine. Good night, Mr. Dollar.
Good night, Doctor.
Yes?
How are you feeling, Mr. Harwell?
Quite well, thank you.
Quite well. I'm glad you came back, Mr. Dollar. I want to talk to you.
I'm glad to hear that.
I spoke to Dr. Stevens.
About not reporting this to the police?
Yes. Why must he be so uncooperative?
Why did you want the police to know?
Because no matter how serious the purpose was, the results were harmless. I want the subject dropped.
Are you afraid of what police investigation might bring out?
For the sake of the family reputation, I do not want their meddling. I intend to manage this in my own way. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to discharge all of the servants.
You told me earlier that they were all above suspicion. You remember?
Since this attempt upon my life, I thought they were.
It's hard to understand, Mr. Harwell. If you really think that one of the servants tried to poison you, you must realize that the same one killed your wife. Still, you want the matter dropped.
I do. Amelia is gone, and I see no possibility that she will return because I bring about for myself and my family the unpleasantness of police interference.
You may believe in your logic, but I'm sorry, it won't work. It'll have to be reported.
Then, young man, leave this house. I didn't want you here. You will never be allowed under this roof again.
All right, Mr. Harwell. Good night. I picked up my glass of evidence again and started downstairs. When I got to the entry hall, I heard voices and looked into the library to see the children, Maxine and Dexter. Their conversation had ended by the time I walked in.
How is he?
He's all right. Back to normal.
What are you doing with that glass?
I'm taking it to the police. They'll want to know if it's the same poison that killed your mother, and there's a chance of finding fingerprints on it.
Here we go again.
Your father didn't want me to take it to the police. Why shouldn't he want to report that somebody tried to kill him?
You think he's afraid that one of us did it? Is that what you mean?
It's come to mind.
Get out of here, darling. I don't have to listen to this.
Wait, Dexter, wait a minute. That's what he thinks. The police are going to, too.
Then I'll listen to them. It's their business, but not his. I don't have anything to be afraid of. I didn't keep a 3-month-old marriage secret like you wanted me to.
Dexter.
And I didn't break the news to her by telling her that she was going to be a grandmother like you wanted me to. You think everything's wrong.
Dexter, shut up. You're drunk.
Oh, let him accuse you. I'm not going to listen to him. I'm going to bed.
He drinks too much.
Is what he said true?
About the baby? Yes, it's true.
And he's living here?
Obviously.
And his wife. She seems to deserve better.
Yes, she does. Dexter was here waiting for Mother to die. So he knew she'd disinherit him if he moved out. And now, neither one of us had better say any more until we get legal counsel.
I took the poison to the police and made a statement. Then I went back to my hotel. Two or three phone calls to Gretchen Harwell. The next morning, I found her at a studio before the day's work began.
What are you doing here?
I tried to reach you last night and couldn't.
What do you want?
Somebody tried to poison Mr. Harwell.
Oh, he's all right?
Yes, I phoned you a number of times last night, but there was no answer.
I was out. I stayed with a girlfriend.
And you left a few things unsaid the last time we talked. Didn't you?
You found out about the baby.
Yeah.
And you've come to congratulate me. How nice. I've been simply swamped with congratulations.
Please, this has to be straightened out, and everything that's held back makes it harder.
What has the baby had to do with it?
Well, it makes a motive stronger than ever for Dexter.
He wouldn't kill his mother.
I was told he'd be disinherited if he left the family manse because of the marriage you kept secret.
Where did you hear that?
Came out last night.
He didn't kill his mother.
How about trying to kill his father?
No. He was trying to help us.
The father? Doesn't sound quite right.
I know it doesn't, but it's true. Dexter didn't even realize it, but I did to him. Mr. Harwell had never done anything in his life, but he tried to help us.
Why?
Because when he married her, he must have had a personality. His mother didn't approve of Dexter and me, but I think his father did.
You didn't keep it a secret from him?
For a little while, until I insisted that we tell him. And he kept it from Amelia.
You know why?
Because she was the dictator. When she was sick, she was worse. She'd think Dexter had waited until she was helpless before marrying the girl he wanted to.
But she found out and was poisoned before she could do anything like dropping Dexter from her will.
I don't care. I don't care. I'll even say that Dexter did have reason to kill his mother. But he never would. And not his father.
You aren't trying to protect him, are you?
Of course I'm not. I don't care how much I love him. I wouldn't want him if he were a murderer.
I did a lot of thinking after I left her. It would have been easy to be swayed by her, and I took that into consideration. In my hotel room, I tried to line up all the points that had come out. Only two of them added. By phone, I tried them on Dr. Stevens. He was more agreeable than I'd expected him to be. It was just before noon the next day when once more I walked through the Harwell's front door.
In here, sir. They're waiting for lunch. Mr. Dollar.
Well, that would be all, Bryden.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Dollar, I thought I told you not to enter this house again.
You did, Mr. Harwell. But I thought the fact that I might save one of your children from a murder trial might make a difference.
Which one, if I may ask?
Dexter.
I don't understand.
I think we've had enough of this, Mr. Dollar. My family has been quite upset since you've arrived.
I think we've had enough, too, Mr. Harwell. I wonder if I could talk to you in private.
Who are you to ask that?
No, Dexter, I think I agree with him. Please leave.
But, Father, I...
You too, Maxine.
All right, Dad. Come on, Dexter.
Sure. See if Dollar can tell him anything worse about me than he knows.
Well, Mr. Dollar...
You wouldn't like to see Dexter charged with the murder of your wife, would you?
Of course I wouldn't.
The police are ready to do it. And they've got a good case. You didn't think of that, did you?
I beg your pardon?
You didn't realize that you might set up a situation that would jeopardize your son.
I don't think I understand.
I think you do. You killed your wife, didn't you?
I?
You filled a glass of water last night to throw off suspicion and to get rid of the evidence at the same time.
Mr. Dollar!
If you didn't, Dexter is going to be brought to trial. I can promise you that. I saw the charges being drawn. They have everything against him, except two or three things.
What are they?
Something that was hidden behind those tall collars of yours. Scratches on your neck. Another thing that came out at the inquest. Bits of flesh under your wife's fingernails. And the fact that your children didn't hear anything the night she died. They all go together. You struggled to keep her quiet, and she scratched you.
You're a very observing young man, aren't you?
Not necessarily, but certain things add up. Am I right?
I... could hardly deny it now. Yes. It made such a little difference to Amelia, though I don't imagine the officials take that into consideration.
They seldom do.
But it made such a great difference in Gretchen's child. I've made many mistakes with my own children through deference to my wife. I'd hoped that I could help my grandchildren through strength. Strength enough to do what I have done to a child through Dexter. I had hoped that Amelia, when she knew that a life was being given while hers was being taken, would be glad and approve, but she didn't.
She asked for a lawyer so that she could change her will. And I knew what I had to do.
I'm sorry, Mr. Howell.
There are many things to regret, Mr. Dollar. Many things. But hastening my wife's death. Her life was decayed. The life she did not want that I did want. So fresh and new that it doesn't even know what hope or helplessness can be. Forgive me, Amelia. Amelia. Forgive me.
Expense account item 3, miscellaneous, $35.85. Item 4, same as item 2, transportation back to Hartford. Expense account total, $122.35. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Remember, friends, Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum refreshes you. Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum gives you real chewing enjoyment. The lively, full-bodied flavor of Wrigley's Spearmint cools your mouth, freshens your taste, sweetens your breath. The smooth, pleasant chewing of Wrigley's Spearmint helps keep you feeling relaxed and satisfied, makes whatever you're doing more enjoyable. Yes, for refreshment plus chewing enjoyment, treat yourself often to Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Millions enjoy it daily. Get a few packages and always keep some handy. That's Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Healthful, refreshing, delicious. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, brought to you by Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum, stars Edmund O'Brien in the title role and is written by Gil Dowd with music by Eddie Dunstetter. Edmund O'Brien can soon be seen starring in the Paramount Pictures production, The Turning Point. Featured in tonight's cast were Victor Perrin, John McIntyre, Herb Butterfield, Jeanette Nolan, Virginia Gregg, and Peter Lee. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is transcribed in Hollywood by Jaime Del Valle. The makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum hope you enjoyed tonight's story of Johnny Dollar and that you're enjoying delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Gum every day. We invite you to join us next week at the same time when, from Hollywood, Edmund O'Brien returns as...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is the CBS Radio Network.
What an exciting case. I've always loved detective fiction, and yours truly, Johnny Dollar, was a great series worthy of enjoyment. That episode, The Amelia Harwell Matter, dates from Wednesday, July 2nd, 1952, on the CBS Radio Network. Next week, I'll be bringing you two special comedies to help you celebrate Valentine's Day, so you definitely don't want to miss that, as I'm sure you'll enjoy the laughs as much as the original listeners did back in the day. If you wish to contact me, you may email me at corey.walker@telus.net, C-O-R-E-Y, or write to CFAS-FM, 2880 15th Avenue, Sprinchers, B.C., Victor 2 Mike, 1 Tango 1. From the CFAS-FM studios in Sprinchers, B.C., I'm Corey Walker. Have a great week.